Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Sage Rosenfels.
Good physical stature, can see, and looks to be smart with the football.
12-year NFL quarterback.
Rosenfels, rolling, near side, throwing for the end zone, touchdown!
Our Tuesday morning quarterback.
There's just so many combinations that a defense can do to confuse a quarterback, even a veteran quarterback. That is the complex, deep science of football that very few people understand.
Sage Rosenfels,
brilliant!
With Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
Well, you've got some heavy lifting to do today. The top of the hour brought to you by Northwestern Football, the Wildcats. Host Iowa Saturday at Ryan Field in a Big Ten West matchup. Limited tickets remain. Buy now at nusports.com. Sage Rosenfels on Twitter at SageRosenfels18. He is on the Alpamonte Ford hotline. Over 500 new and used vehicles to choose from at Alpamonte Ford. Well, Sage, I don't know, man. I don't know where you want to start. I don't know how we're gonna do this, but we got a lot of work to do figuring out what's left in this wreckage.
Well, it's not fun to watch film like that, to spend real time, not, watching it during the actual game, but the coach's film where you're really getting into the details of what you try to imagine or think what the play is and what it's designed to look like and what the protection is and what Mitch is being taught and what's going on. And it's definitely no fun because it's ugly. It's ugly at all levels. The offensive line's ugly. The route combination sometimes, or there was, I put up a photo on Twitter this morning where there's four guys in the same area, like right in the same line of sight. Like that's terrible by the receivers. And obviously the quarterback, who seems to me, obviously has not progressed, but he's regressing. And I think it's because it goes back to sort of his foundation, the very, very beginning of whatever he is being taught. He is continually throwing balls on, that are late, that are in a second hitch. It seems to me that the play calling is sort of throw a dart at the play sheet and see where it hits and to draw that or, call that one up. Doesn't seem to always be a rhyme or reason. And that was not a – I watch a lot of football. I get to watch the 49ers a lot, and obviously the Vikings got their offense rolling right now. That was in no way fun football to watch. And they are putting everything on their quarterback, who is one of their worst players on offense. Like that is maximizing your weaknesses.
That's what I just don't understand, Sage. And after, you came in and we talked for a little while a couple weeks ago, and I really kind of got the understanding that this is so much on the decision-making process of the quarterback, even more so than other offenses. And I just don't understand why they keep on asking him to do that much. And I wonder if you see things in the offense where they're trying to help him out with those decisions, or if this offense just has to stop asking him to make any sort of decisions whatsoever in order to maybe salvage something.
Well, if you know where the spread comes from, it's for the fact that, when you get to high school football and a lot of times college football with athletic quarterbacks, the quarterback is one of the best athletes on the field. And you sort of, he's got the ball every time. You want to put all the decisions in his hand and spread it around and all these things. And you sort of put it on the quarterback because he's the best player. Again, I brought up Iowa State because of David Montgomery's there. At my school, we got a kid named Brock Purdy who's a sophomore, and they run sort of like the Bears offense in a lot of way. But he's the best player on the offense, and it's not the offensive line. So he is wheeling and dealing, and he is the sort of the point guard who's Steve Nash, and he's up and down the field. But this Bears quarterback is he's not the best player on the offense, and he might be one of the worst, and so they're putting all this sort of pressure on their worst player. By contrast, you look at some of these other teams who actually go under center, who actually put their tight end next to the tackle, who actually run the ball just simple inside outside zone with some play action to boot off of that. They're having great success because they're not asking their quarterback to do everything, because in the NFL defenses are so good, you can't force your quarterback to do everything unless he's, you know, Tom Brady or, you know, we've seen it with Aaron Rodgers. When they have cut back on Aaron's responsibility and he is playing his best football. They are maximizing Mitch Trubisky's responsibility and he's playing his worst football. That's coaching to me.
So that, I guess, would answer my next question, and that's how you balance whatever you're still trying to develop while also making sure he's not killing you. Because he's got to have some latitude to make the reads and play the position, but is it more classic Andy Reid-style half-field Alex Smith stuff? I mean, how do you thread the needle of making sure you're not shutting him down completely and going just full-blown game manager on him with also making sure that you're not giving him too much?
Well, you know, you guys answer me this question. What is this team's identity offensively?
They don't have one.
No,
they've said so. There's no bread and butter.
What's Minnesota's identity offensively now? Obviously, it wasn't very good versus the Bears, but what do they do?
No, it's been pound the ball with outside zone run.
And had a play-action pass.
And look for vertical passes.
Because they got two really good receivers. They don't have a very good O-line, but they've learned how to run block pretty well. And when you have the play-action, it makes them so they don't have to pass block for 5 seconds on a straight drop-back pass. The Bears don't really have an identity. It's just they're in shotgun and they run all these random plays. There's no play action, so the line has to hold up every time they throw the football. When they run bootlegs, you know, they run a bootleg on 2nd and 10 and try to take a shot down the field. Why would the Saints play anything but soft cover 2 on 2nd and 10 against a team that doesn't run the football? So they're trying to take a shot against the worst coverage because it's like there's no rhyme or reason. And there's no identity. And if anything, their identity is, again, like sort of maximizing the weaknesses of their weakest player, which is the quarterback who's so raw still. And, you know, so in some ways it feels like so young. It's like he's a rookie out there. I found interesting, by the way, and they finally got that drive going late in the fourth quarter, mid fourth quarter. They finally got that drive going. The first like 5 plays they ran are what I would call day one installation plays. These are the plays that they install the first day of OTAs or even like rookie mini camp. Hey, guys, we're going to run these running plays today, 3 running plays, and we're going to run these 15 passing plays. And that's all you run at practice. And on that final drive, when they finally started executing and moving the football, they went to day one installation plays. They had a basic slant. They had the old Hank play, which is a tight end over a ball. What we call a triple seam play. But it was, you know, another slant and a flat to Cohen route. It was these just basic plays that, you know, they're great for, again, having like the foundation thing there, but you got to have more than that because the defense is when they're really playing, they've seen all those plays so many times they can stop them. So like, it's like the only way they were having success in that ballgame was the basic stuff, which is okay when you're losing at the end of the football game, but if you want to, you know, play big time football, you got to have more creativity than that.
Would you invest, if you're the Bears, in rescuing Mitch or moving on?
If I were the Bears, I know it's maybe I'm too far ahead of myself here, but I think he is just as fault as is whoever is designing this offense. So maybe is that Matt Nagy or the coordinator? But I think they're equally bad. I really do. I think they're equally bad. And I like the players they have. They're different, but I like the players that they have. And they have their different skill sets. It doesn't seem like the O-line is working very well together. There's guys that are unblocked sometimes, and doesn't seem like they have much of a game plan for these various blitzes that they're seeing in that game. And they didn't get to sort of a blitz check until late when the Saints were all up, which feels like to me there's like not great preparation going on in game planning. So, I think there's a lot of issues on this offensive group here, coaches and players, but obviously it's always easy to blame the quarterback for everything.
Can they fix the offense while fixing the quarterback? Is that a process that can happen at the same time as you're trying to win games against the Chargers on Sunday?
There is a phrase I used my rookie year. I was told my rookie year by my offensive coordinator, Jimmy Ray, who's this longtime coordinator, he said, you can't train a horse in the middle of the stream.
That's what I was worried
about. And basically, it's like, we're midway through the season here. You think we're going to come up some new tricks and completely change this offense? I mean, that's just, it's just really, really hard to do. So they sort of are what they are. I don't know if I were them, I would try to. I mean, it can't hurt. It can't hurt to maybe put this quarterback under center and actually do some outside zone stuff. You know, one of the things about that style of offense where those teams run all that outside zone, and sort of what Minnesota's doing, is it slows down the game and it makes the defense sort of identify itself. And we're just going to grind it out. And it's just going to be, and the Bears have the defense to do it, but we're just going to grind it out and not be in, you know, their offense is designed to be like a track meet. Their defense is designed to be in a slug it out football game. Yeah. They are playing the opposite of complementary football.
He's Sage Rosenfels, our Tuesday quarterback, brought to you by Sharp Vision Modern LASIK. Believing is seeing. Schedule a free consultation today.
If indeed we've got an issue with the design of the offense, you say everybody's at fault. I've been trying to figure out the two Matt Nagys that exist. The Matt Nagy that can put together a reasonable game plan, understands it's important to have things balanced, and then the guy who calls plays on Sunday, where so many things seem disconnected and independent of a larger plan. And I don't know if it's inexperience or if it's impatience, because I know I've been around enough offensive coordinators that they always think the next play is the one. They always say, all right, oh, that didn't work, and I'm going to go back to that. And they get stung by things that don't work. What can Nagy do to get better at having a little bigger picture understanding of the game that's in front of him relative to his play sheet?
Well, you know, it's interesting, and Nagy comes from the Andy Reid coaching tree. And there is now basically a documented history, I would say, other than maybe Doug Peterson, who's having a lot of success, but there's been a lot of coaches who have struggled who were Andy Reid's, you know, quarterback's coach or offensive coordinator and went somebody else. You know, Brad Childress was a terrible play caller and play designer, yet he was somehow Andy Reid's coordinator with Don McNabb, and when they were going to championship games, was it four, you know, about 4 years in a row or whatever, that, you know, four out of so many years. And so there is this issue here that I, you know, find interesting, that sort of, again, there's a pattern with the coaching stuff. So, you know, I'm not sure, you know, maybe I don't know who the coordinator is, you know, all that well there, and you know, maybe somebody else can call the plays. Well, something has to change, and you can't, you know, if you keep doing the same thing, you're going to get the same result.
When you look back, and I just retweeted something that you did, Sage, and I know you mentioned it a little while ago, those receivers all kind of stacked up one after another in various depths, but all pretty much just jacked up together. Is there any purpose to that? Is it to make it easier for Mitch to look in one place to read things, or is it just purely bad play design? Like, completely handicapping everything?
Yeah, that felt like either bad play design and or bad execution. I mean, again, I'm not in there for those meetings of, like, how did you design that play? And maybe somebody ran the wrong route, but four guys in one space. I mean, when you talk about NFL coordinators in college, just football in general and passing game, a lot of times there's various triangles that go on, and they have to have this correct spacing both vertically down the field and with some width. So there's not just a high-low, but there's some separation sort of left and right, and you know, there's multiple plays in that game where it seemed to me like a hard read for the quarterback. But also, again, you know, on the quarterback, there's some basic things that concern me. Like, I think two times in this game, the Saints were in defensively, and they were a bare front, which basically means all five offensive linemen are covered by a defensive lineman or a linebacker, and so it's going to be one-on-ones, five-on-five. Well, being the fact that that's five players and there's six in the back end and you have a free safety, that means that it's completely man-to-man everywhere across the field, five-on-five with your free safety, okay? Two times in those situations, he went to what I call the too-high look, to where he was going to where there's, you know, that's usually a two-safety concept. But you know, the first third down of the game, he went to a stick route to Allen Robinson. Allen did not run out of it. It was versus man coverage. You got to run out of those things. You can't sort of settle in a hole like in zone defense. But again, if it was me, I would have gone to the other side, to the slant flat side, which is perfectly set up for sort of single high man-to-man coverage. But he goes to the two high side. Like, that's the first third down of the game. When teams are in a bare front, it's almost always man-to-man down the field. And so you go to your man guy, and later on he tries to throw a seam route versus a man. A defense, and that's hard to do because the man guy is just going to run right with you and squeeze you right to the safety right in the middle of the field. There were other guys on the outside just to throw a hitch and get a first down on like a third and two or third and three. So, like, there's some basic things going on. Like, that should hit his mind, I would think, in the third year of I got a bare front, probably man-to-man out there. Who's my man-to-man guy? And we didn't see that twice in the ballgame.
Last question for you. I want to bounce a crackpot theory off of you from none other than the Scorer's Patrick Manley, the former long-snapping great.
This pot is very
and
correct,
he,
yeah.
This was, I think, tongue-in-cheek. But he said, sit Allen Robinson. He said he's so good, he's keeping Mitchell Trubisky from seeing anybody else. There's so much trust in him that it's keeping him from going through his progressions, from recognizing who else is open, and it's essentially broken the idea of the offense because of that's like his security blanket. I understand the point that he's making, but is there truth in that? Is there a way to make him less reliant on his best receiver?
Well, it's not taken as one of the best players in the Bears team off the field. I don't even, like, I'm trying to figure out, you know, maybe that's why Patrick was a long snapper, you know? So I don't know. That doesn't make any sense to me. I understand, like, trying to not have Mitch force the ball to a certain player. But I think the Bears could use as many weapons as possible on the field.
Yeah, I don't think it made much sense to Manley either. We were just having that kind of day yesterday, Sage. Appreciate you, my man. We'll talk to you next week.
Searching for answers.
We'll get them someday. Sage Rosenfels is our quarterback whisperer.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.